on ABC Radio Melbourne. You're with Rochelle Hunt.
And joined by Danny Valente, writer, eater, cook, just general lover of food. You can catch all of what she's up to on DannyValente.com. Danny, before we get into, in just a moment, looking at fermenting food, and we're going to talk about that because there has been a little bit of news off the back of the food poisoning case at the MCG. Now, I was quite stressed to find out that the finger has been pointed at a relish, at chutney, one of my favourite things in the entire world, which I thought could never go off.
It's a distressing story all round, and to learn that it was the relish is, yeah, very distressing, because who doesn't love a little bit of pickle on their sandwich or their terrine or their pie? So, yeah, it's an odd one. You wouldn't point first to the relish, and I suppose that's why it's taken so long to exactly uncover what the cause was. To me, it sounds like a funny one, because the reports that I read pointed to a toxin that was in either the barberry, quince or fig elements that were in that relish. And to me, that doesn't sound like the relish going off, because if you open a jar of relish and it hasn't been preserved properly, you know about it. It's covered in mold. Right? So if it's not that, because presumably they're not scraping off the mold and popping it on, what was it, a $700 lunch or something? I'm sure they're not doing that. So it sounds like there was some sort of extra element in one of those fruit parts of the relish before it went into the jar.
Because they sort of feel like they can handle anything, a relish or a chutney, because it's full of sugar and it's been preserved and there's lots in it.
It's really been cooked out. And if the preserving's been done right, and certainly in a, you know, it's not that hard to get it right, and you know if you've got it wrong. So, yeah, it's a funny one.
Well, given that there's quite a trend in preserves and fermenting, in just a moment we'll actually speak with the Chair of Food Safety Information Council about what we should be looking out for in our homes and in our workplaces if we're deciding to make a pickle or a relish or some kind of fancy drink. But let's look at some things that we may no longer be able to call our own. So we know that being able to call champagne is something that's been thrown around for a while, and we like to call it now Australian sparkling. But there's a bit of a shake-up, and mainly for the dairy industry by the looks of things. What's happening?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. So as part of an EU-Australia free trade agreement, the EU has asked Australia to consider not using geographical indicators, which what they mean by that is names, food names that they associate with a particular region. So some of the ones that they pointed to that, you know, people are up in arms about, feta, Gruyere, Gorgonzola.
See, feta is one that I mean, I just thought that was a style, a type of cheese.
And it's not, I mean, there is Bulgarian feta, there's Danish feta, there's Greek feta. I actually went and had a look at the documents, and it's really quite interesting. Most of them we are not going to worry about. So, for example, some of the ones the EU doesn't want us to use are Baranski Kulin.
Well, that's a shame. Is that on a daily?
There's a Slovenian ham called Krunčka Klobasa. Did you want to use that?
No, I'll be fine.
Okay, to leave that off the table. What about Wachauer Weinbrand? That's an Austrian spirit. So as much as you might want to drink it, you probably don't need to use the name. And the vast majority of this long, long list of products are in that category. They're like, yeah, fine, no worries. You can have that, you can have that, you can have that. But then you do come to feta, and it's written in the EU documentation using the Greek characters. So it's as though they're, I don't know if they're also talking to the Danes and the Bulgarians and saying, by the way, guys, can you think of something else
and
to call your tea?
How strict are people on this? So, you know, I mean, obviously you can't call a sparkling Australian champagne. It's more just the you and I's of the world. They'll be like, who wants a glass of champagne? And
there's no listening devices at our parties making sure we don't say champagne when we're pouring Australian sparkling. So it's at a trade level. So it's basically that the EU wants to be able to sell these products. They want to protect their producers. Australia's trade offices at the same time are trying to protect our producers. So, you know, some of them, I think it's not such a big deal. So Scotch beef is on there. People have been talking about Scotch fillet, but I think actually Scotch fillet isn't there. It's Scotch beef. So I think the terms are quite specific. And even, you know, Scotch fillet, we call it a ribeye as often as we call it a Scotch fillet. So some of them, I think there's been perhaps a little bit more hysteria than necessary. But at the same time, I've been racking my brains as to what else we could call feta.
I don't, soft white cheese? I mean, but that could be anything, really. And sometimes it's crumbly.
I know. Yeah, white,
salty
crumble.
In a,
On a serious note, though, will it have a big impact for Australian dairy producers if they're wanting to export or they're wanting to promote locally a certain type of cheese? If you can't call something feta.
What it is. Look, I mean, I suppose the glass half full way of looking at it is this is an opportunity to differentiate. So, you know, we're not trying to replicate Greek feta. We're trying to produce a great Australian cheese that we can market for its own special qualities. So perhaps it's an opportunity to see it as a marketing. There is marketing benefit in differentiating. It's a big thing for a brand to consider. You know, a lot of these are very small producers and this isn't, you know, top of mind. Probably the top of mind is getting the cows milked and getting the cheese made. The goats, whatever it is. So, it's a big issue for small producers.
Feta is not a region. The Greek word feta comes from the Italian word feta, which means slice, as in fettuccine, says this particular text.
Okay.
I've been making goat milk feta in that particular style for about 14 years. I call it fettina. The first half of the international courts in 2005. That's from Corinne in Drysdale.
There you go. So we've yeah, so people will come up with creative ways to link it to the cheese that we all know and love, but to differentiate it.
There was a bit of a fad with feta and everyone went bananas for it and it was all preserved in olive oil. And is it still as popular as it was, you know, a couple of years ago?
Yes, it is. And you see, I mean, there's the original brand, local Victorian one, but then there's lots of knockoffs. I mean, not, you know, they're beautiful as well, a lot of those cheeses. I've even seen a vegan version of it recently. So I think that, you know, because you can put so many other flavours into it, so feta can often be quite a mild and creamy cheese, so you can add, you know, the flavour of the olive oil, you know, the salt, the chilli, the other herbs, the garlic, whatever it is that you want to flavour it with, can be pretty delicious.
What's your favourite feta recipe, even though we shouldn't be calling it feta? Non-feta. Fettarini.
I'm a fan of a spinach and feta pie. I love it. Like, whether it's in shortcrust pastry or layered up with phyllo pastry. Are we allowed to call it phyllo? So I love that. And, yeah, my kids have been asking me to make one.
But, Danny Valente, you're a fan of a pie in general. Now, you came in here and you said, oh, yeah, by the way, I also made a lasagna pie.
No, I didn't make it. I ate it.
Oh, you ate it? Well, yeah. Hang on. Is it a pie or is it a lasagna?
I know, but isn't this the amazing thing about food, Rochelle, is that some foods just, you know, you it's not obvious, but then when you put them together, you're like, yeah, I think
this is
always,
the best thing I've ever eaten.
They always wanted to get married. So I've had actually two lasagna pies at different places, different corners of Melbourne recently, and they were quite different. So it's a really interesting thing to think about. But it's, I suppose, it's carbs, it's meat, it's tomato, and it's fat.
And hang on, and there's pastry?
Different ways of putting it together. So, so they've both just had a pastry bottom and then cheesy top.
Is it needed, the pastry?
Like, should you just have a lasagna?
Yes.
What if you're a tradie and you're jumping in your van and you want a lasagna, but you can't hold it in one hand? But if it's in pie form, how good is life?
Everything in pie form just makes me happy. I used to make my own little pies to take to the football once upon a time when I had time to do things like that.
That's so nice.
Oh, it was like heaven, and I just felt so smug going, made these own little pies. And it didn't matter what was inside it. It could have just been dodgy ingredients. Wrapped in pastry, cooked.
Makes everything better.
Everything is okay.
Bit of relish, Rochelle.
If you weren't to call it feta, you could call ours better. Thank you, Stu. Oh, that's a very good idea.
Nice one.
Crumble some feta on top of baked beans on toast. It makes it something special. Danny Valente is with you. Coming up in just a moment, we'll have a chat with the chair of the Food Safety Information Council about whether or not we should be fermenting at home and what we should be looking out for, given that, well, it's pretty on trend at the moment.
Thursday, ABC Radio Melbourne presents John Fane and Barry Cassidy in conversation. Two hugely experienced broadcasters sharing insights and stories about politics, the media, and their remarkable careers. Recorded with a live audience at ABC Southbank and broadcast on a special episode of The Conversation Hour, Thursday morning from 11. Streaming on our website, via the ABC Listen app, and on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Rochelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Danny Valente is with you as well. And we're both, well, a little stressed about the fact that the relish is being blamed for the food poisoning incident at the MCG. But certainly fermenting foods is something that's quite trendy and many people are trying to do on their own at home at the moment. You would be a big fermenter Danny?
Yeah, I've got a bit of the old kombucha going and a sourdough, and I've played around with kefir. So
well, yeah. These are all the problem ones.
I know. So I've read the release. I'm like, uh-oh.
In a lot of trouble.
But I'm okay so far.
Kathy Moore is the Chair of Food Safety Information Council. Kathy, before we get into, you know, what we need to look out for if we're fermenting food at home, how rare is it for something like a chutney or a relish to be the cause of a food poisoning outbreak?
Well, a chutney and a relish are very different, as you would understand, from fermented food. So they're usually made with, they're basically kind of like a type of jam. So usually they're made with fruit or something like tomato with lots of sugar and other things added and cooked up. So in that sense, it is actually really quite rare that they would cause an illness. And unfortunately, with the circumstances with the investigation in the Melbourne outbreak, we actually don't know what the microorganism of concern was in that case. And so when they investigate those things, they talk to people and basically they've linked it to the relish but actually haven't found the causative organism. So we can only guess at what might have happened there. But as you know, in answer to your question, as a general rule of thumb, it is quite rare for relishes and jams and those sorts of things to cause illness.
Going back to, I guess, the way our grandparents used to ferment food and pickle and preserve, it's really on trend at the moment. And it's a wonderful way to not waste food and to eat healthy food and to have all of your favourites at hand all year round. But you are slightly concerned about maybe some of the ways we are preserving, cleaning, sterilising, and there are certain age brackets of people that may be more at risk. What are some of your major concerns, Kathy?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you say, like fermentation has been around for thousands of years, and in fact, it was, you know, it precedes well precedes refrigeration, and that's why ancient people did fermentations, because it was a way to preserve foods. I think what's happening now is that people are starting to do things differently. So, we're really familiar with those traditional fermentations, like yogurt making, sauerkraut making, cheese making, all those things that we're quite well versed with. But people are moving into spaces, fermenting in spaces, when I say spaces, in areas and with raw materials that traditionally we've not got much experience with. And some of those examples might be different vegetables. That's probably the best example. And I think that's probably one of the areas where there is more risk. Or even meats. We would certainly not recommend home fermenting meats because we know there have been a lot of outbreaks of foodborne disease associated with fermented meats, even commercially prepared fermented meats. So that is certainly an area we would not recommend people go into. But certainly, you know, some of the more well-versed things like homemade yogurt, where you can actually use a starter culture, those sorts of things, they should be perfectly safe to do.
Well, Danny Valentino, I mean, you're making your own sourdough, you make your own soy, you make your own yogurt, all of those things. And, I mean, I've even got texts here now saying that a lot of Japanese and Asian recipes, they call for a pickle that doesn't really involve fermentation as such. And there's lots of ways now that it is becoming a common way to eat. I mean, how much research do you need to do before you go and create a dish or a starter?
Yeah, look, it's that funny balance between understanding that something's a traditional process that's been done for thousands of years and by, you know, grandmothers through history. So you feel like it just should be a basic skill. But at the same time, you are working with microorganisms and not all of them are safe to eat. So it's like you need the microorganisms, you need the bacteria to actually do the job of fermentation, but then not all microorganisms, not all bacteria is good for us to ingest. Some of the quick pickles, and I'd probably put, I don't know if you agree, Kathy, but, you know, a sort of a kimchi that only takes a few days to create, for example, which uses cabbage, I'd say it's, I don't feel like there's well, certainly a quick pickle that you can do in 10 minutes. There's no problems with that. But then a kimchi that perhaps you can watch it take place over a few days. You can see the bubbles and it sort of smells nice and smells good. Yep. I think our senses do lead us towards
knowing
good
what's
practices.
Right. And, yeah.
In some cases, do you think, Kathy?
Yeah, I think you've got a good point there. And probably one of the risks with home fermentations is if the starting material, so your vegetable or whatever you're fermenting, is contaminated to start with, and if the starter culture does not grow quickly enough, then those bad bugs that might be contaminating the starting material can possibly outgrow the fermentation.
Yeah, and so I suppose that's what you're saying with the familiarity. Yeah. So if you don't know what, exactly, for example, kimchi is supposed to look like, and really if you've got some cabbage festering away in a corner, then that's not so good. Whereas if you've got some yummy, active kimchi with, you know, healthy bubbles and healthy fermentation, so perhaps it is about, seeking out good examples of those products that you're trying to get to before you go, you know, hairing off and making your own.
Absolutely. Don't start with something really unfamiliar. So, in fermentations, we are actually relying on the cultures or the good microorganisms out-competing any bad microorganisms that might be there, and reducing the pH, because that reduction in the pH or increase in the acid is what makes it safer.
And there's another great text here that says a lot of this stuff these days is called relish, but there's no way of knowing if it was actually a preserve. And sometimes they're almost more like a fresh sauce. So it's hard to know in terms of, well, this food poisoning case, what it may have been. Mm. Kathy Moore, as the chair of the Food Safety Information Council, just finally, who mainly is at risk here and who would you like to be super aware if you are thinking of making your own sourdough or whatever it may be at home? Who's most at risk?
Thank you for asking that question, because the people we like to be most aware of health and safety risks are the vulnerable people. So once upon a time, we used to just say the young and old, but we're also talking about other people that fall into those categories, pregnant women, because their immune system is depressed during pregnancy, but also people with an immune compromised system. And so that includes people that might be on cancer therapy, other chemotherapies, other reasons. But also we're getting more information that diabetics perhaps have a slightly more compromised immune system as well. So all those people need to be mindful that they're potentially more susceptible to foodborne illness.
Especially as they're becoming more and more popular. Kathy, thank you. It's an important message. Kathy Moore, the Chair of Food Safety Information Council. 4 minutes away from three, Danny Valente is with you as well. Anthony and Q, Rochelle, Danny, been making chutney from the garden for 3.5 years now. Only had one bottle go off. That's good. Hashtag spread the chutney. And spread the love. If you make chutney, do you give it away or do you create a stash, Danny Valente?
Oh, I try to do both. I try to create enough that I've got a stash for the year, but I've also got enough to give away because it's such a great gift.
But when you get down to like only one or two jars left, you
get
a bit panicky.
Well, you do. Like, I tried to bottle enough tomatoes to have for the whole winter, and I think I should have done one box more this autumn. And one of my bottles hadn't sealed properly and it was mouldy, so that was very sad.
But it is quite serious when you look at some of the implications it can have on the elderly, on people that are pregnant, on young people that are going through certain treatments. And given how popular these are now, please do your research, especially before you try and do it at home, and maybe even some of the products that you're buying, if it be from stores or from farmers markets as well. You sort of really do need to do your research.
Yeah, definitely.
You?
And if you don't have people in your immediate circle that you can chat to and ask, there are so many internet forums that people will be so happy to share information. So, you know, seek out, I'm sure there's a kimchi support group out there if you're just not sure if your cabbage is bubbling in the right way. Don't find out the hard way.
A jar of chutney is being opened, a photograph is being sent, and I'm making a toasty as you speak. Oh, what's on it? A bit of cheese, a nice bit of cut meat.
Yeah, chutney. I'm there. I'm so about that. Put it in a pie, perhaps, then.
I know, I feel like making a pie now. Just finally, your favourite pie filling other than lasagna? It just doesn't make sense, lasagna pie. It's like Homer Simpson would say that.
Yeah, but he'd eat it. I reckon I'm just all good with a classic steak pie with really good relish.
Chicken pie?
Chicken curry pie I love. So, yeah, just slightly new wave, like a Thai chicken pie. I'm very happy to eat one of those.
And if people are to jump onto your website at the moment, Dani Valente, what can they see? What can they make?
They can make a dulce de leche, so a milk caramel, which involves cooking milk up for hours and hours until it goes sticky and delicious.
And then you eat it on your own and you don't share it with anyone.
Don't tell anybody.
You can go to DaniValente.com to see all of the gorgeous things she's been making and all of the wonderful things you've been up to. As always, thank you.